You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the Spike Rogue. Each week, we go deep on brewing spicy modern decks geared at tournament play. We put our creations to the test in competitive leagues and share our findings on the air. This week, it's a Thunderkin Awakening. The Elemental Tribe is rising from the reef. We are brewing Vesperlark Combo, Rageforger Aggro, and more balls than you can shake a Skelemental at. All of that and more is coming up on this edition of Faithless Brewing. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Episode 17 of Faithless Brewing. I am David Robertson, coming to you from Edinburgh, Scotland. I am joined, as always, by Damon Alexander in Seattle. Damon, how's it going?
Oh, it's good. It's a little bit rainy, but it's still nice. How's Scotland?
It's awesome. The Fringe Festival's on, enjoying a few wee sweeties, a wee slungy. And we are joined by Mr. Cave Dan himself, Dan Schriever. How's life, Dan?
I'm doing great, but I'm not in Scotland. What are you doing over there?
I am enjoying the Fringe Festival, which, if people don't know, is a three-week sort of City of Edinburgh doubles or triples in population. They have thousands of shows put on by amateurs and semi-professionals and some professional, like, comedians and mimes and burlesque shows and operas and everything. And they kind of take over all these old bars and black rooms and stuff. And so there's just shows all over the place. So the city's kind of alive with buskers and young kids trying out the new material and stuff like that. And then my sister and I will be running a half marathon in Reykjavik on Saturday. She lives in Finland right now, so we kind of met in the middle. And yeah, just been having a great time here.
It never occurred to me that meeting in the middle for anyone could be like, well, I'll see you in Reykjavik. Let's be halfway. That good for you too? Like, cool, I'll be there.
Much easier flight from Finland than the Twin Cities, trust me.
That sounds sweet.
We didn't have any decks to discuss from last week because we got a pretty deep dive into the Niv-Mizzet list you guys played at GP Minneapolis to some success. Since then, we've had another GP, actually pretty close to where I am, in Birmingham. Do you guys want to talk about the results?
So this is probably going to go down as one of the lost GPs. On the theory that Hogak is on its way out in the next Bannet Restricted announcement, which is coming up in just a few days from now. Unfortunately, the timing was such that there were three GP weekends in a row, Minneapolis, then Birmingham, and now Las Vegas this week, all sort of featuring Modern, and attentions we focused heavily on Hogak for all these events.
So the results have been influenced by the presence of Hogak anyway.
What a thrilling time it is to be a Modern Magic player. What we got from Birmingham was actually really cool, because Frank Karsten and the Channel Fireball coverage team posted all of the deck lists for every main event competitor. They now do electronic deck submission. Everyone has to submit their decks like the night before the GP starts or the morning of. So they were able to post all 1,000 or 1,300 deck lists. And from that, enterprising players with an algorithm were able to post like complete matchup analysis for the top 10 or 12 archetypes, something like that. And the results were kind of interesting. They were basically like a big four of decks that did really well against the field. Do you want to guess what those top four were, Dave?
The Red Prowess deck that we talked about last week, Hogak, Tron, and maybe the Mardu Pyromancer list?
Three out of four. That's not bad. You're missing the actual best performing deck was Urza Sword at 60% win rate, which is kind of crazy. Then the next three were the Red Phoenix, Hogak, and Tron, all at about 55% win rate. But these are fairly large sample sizes for a large tournament. In that sense, these are the decks that they aren't taking anyone by surprise anymore. Like, it's been sort of proven now, both through theory crafting and through these events, that these are the decks that do well in the current metagame with Hogak as part of it.
Urza's Sword deck seems like a natural evolution of the War Prison deck from about a year ago. And that deck always seemed to have really good GP numbers, like in the high 50s, low 60% win rate. And this one got a little bit more explosive with a combo finish. So it doesn't surprise me too much. What I'm curious about is if the deck can keep these numbers up post-Hogak.
So do you think what will happen in the post-Hogak metagame is that more sideboard slots can kind of be dedicated to sort of the Opal kind of decks, and that that'll mitigate the success of this kind of deck, Damon?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, Shatterstorm was a card you saw on a lot of sideboards, at least as a one-of, back when that deck was doing really well. And then Blue-White would be packing all these Ceremonious Rejections, and nobody has room for those right now.
Yeah, my hope is that I don't really want to see Urza Sword dominate the metagame. I still have PTSD from the year of Ironworks or whatever that was.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
So there are three really powerful hate cards, Stony Silence, Collector Oof, and Karn, the Great Creator, that all are capable of easily hosing out artifacts. What makes it difficult from the artifact side is that those are three different permanent types, right? Enchantment, creature, and planeswalker. So unless you're packing a bunch of Assassin's Trophies or something.
Or Blast Zone.
Right, so Engineer Explosives cannot do it, of course, because it's shut off by those cards. Blast Zone could get you out of a pinch there. That's kind of mana intensive, I don't know.
It looks like they don't play Blast Zone, so I guess I'm not right on that.
Is Urza's Sword typically a Grixis shell, or is it just blue-red, or mono-blue, or... I know, obviously, how the combo works and everything like that, but the shell they've kind of built around it. Or are they playing green to play Ancient Stirrings, or...?
I just found this list that is called Four Color Urza by Goldfish, but it appears to feature red for Engineer, blue for Urza and Wur, green for Nature's Claim, black for Thoughtseize, and white for Teferi Time Raveler. So it's all five colors? Nice Opal's a hell of a card.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that the deck is very successful still is that a lot of people don't really know what's in the list, and that's partly because there is not an agreed-upon best build of Urza Sword. You need blue for Urza, for Wur of Invention, and Thopter Fountain requires blue plus either white or black. So you can build it straight blue-white, and I think we saw that at the last Pro Tour, the white cards being just mainly Teferis. You can add the red because that gives you the Goblin Engineer who sort of gets the Sword of the Meek into the graveyard for free, quote-unquote. And black would just be for slightly different options in your artifacts, such as Nile Spellbomb, and for maybe cleaner removal. So Grixis Urza is one of the variants we saw, and then like these four-color ones that just try to have it all. The Assassin Trophy is nice for the reasons we were just stating, like answering whatever hate piece comes in against you. So we'll see. I mean, Urza is another one of those cards that's a little bit egregious. There are a handful of these cards from Modern Horizons. They're all mythics. No coincidence there in a double-priced set that the really pushed modern cards seem to be mythics that you need four of in your deck. There is a future, a dark timeline in which Urza becomes the next big problem. But I am hopeful that it'll be like you say, Dave, that it just sort of can be handled with hate once we have more sideboard slots free.
I will say my experience also playing against these Urza decks is there's a type of player that is really good at kind of solving these like complicated puzzles. And they tend to have a lot of success with it. I'm thinking of, you know, like Matt Nass, you know, just dominated with the previous sort of dominant Mox Opal list like you guys are talking about. But the average player can't quite seem to pick up decks like this that don't have this sort of obvious way to win. And so, you know, you need to be really careful when you're testing. You can play against, you know, me playing Urza Sword and think you've got a great record against it or a great matchup. And then when you play these sort of more advanced players who are really, you know, looking deep into the lines, it kind of reminds me of when... The 3 and a Phyrexian green mana that search your library for creatures when you sack the creature.
Birthing Pod.
Birthing Pod. It reminds me of those guys who really became like Birthing Pod experts, you know, the Sam Pardees, et cetera. They just had so much success with that deck. And then you play like the average player and, you know, those the second and third level lines that those great players see, the average player doesn't. And so I think you can really get a false sense of, oh, just a couple sideboard slots is all I need. So... that's just a warning to people if this becomes a more dominant archetype in the metagame.
Yeah, so a question that I think has been on my mind and that some people have asked us directly is, if there is a banning, what does that mean for us sort of as brewers, as deck builders? This is the second time we've addressed this question because we thought Hogak was gone once already. But now that it may be, hopefully really gone, does this open up anything for us? Or what are the metagame considerations as we're putting together our rogue test decks? Like, what do we think we'll have to beat? Are there any sort of zones or angles that are now safe to brew in?
Well, I guess I'd like to first ask, I mean, are we sort of in agreement that all three of us think Hogak will be banned?
I think there's like a 90% chance, and then there's a 5% chance they ban Citrus Supplier. and we learned that Hogak was only playing it to help in the mirror, and now the deck's even better against the field all over again.
That's the darkest timeline, kind of a block out the sun, and then it turns out the machines just start using people as energy.
I sure hope they ban Hogak. That card is unreasonable.
Yeah, I think Frank Carson just wrote, I believe it was a Channel Fireball article, that said that you can cast a turn 2 Hogak like 60% of the time. I mean, that's just an 8-8 trample on turn 2 60% of the time is obviously very powerful, and sometimes it brings friends with it. So, you know, it's good that they take chances, WotC. Obviously, they were reticent to ban a card that's in an active set they're trying to profit from. But yeah, maybe we've got enough data now that suggests that it's going to be banned. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that they will ban it. The numbers justify it more or less. You can make the numbers justify it if you want to ban Hogak. And I think that they already sort of stated their intention with the Bridge from Below banning. They kind of wanted the problem to be solved already. So I think the fact that people are still complaining is going to be enough to motivate them to like finish the job, as it were. If they hadn't already tried to take aim at Bridge from Below, if no card had been banned from Hogak before, I could see a world in which they're like, oh, these numbers are good, but let's let it ride for a while. But I think that because they already tried it once and it didn't seem to work, they have to sort of step up and kill it dead once and for all.
Oh, I think the numbers are good enough with Hogak. The format is so warped around it. I think if they didn't ban Hogak, it might lead to like a pretty big dip in modern interest.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
And then they can sell their Historic Horizons packs, I guess, is like their conspiracy.
So I guess to not dodge your question, Dan, the banning of Hogak, first of all, would allow you to use the graveyard as a resource in a way that isn't super linear, because you wouldn't have to worry about main deck graveyard hate. I mean, it's very common now for quote-unquote fair decks like Jund or, you know, white-black or whatever to play like one or two Nile Spell Bombs. It's very common for blue-white to play one or two or multiple Surgical Extractions or graveyard hates main. Some Hogak lists were playing graveyard hate main, so you never would get that quote-unquote like free game one win doing whatever your trick was, because people were already metagamed against this much more powerful graveyard deck. So I think it allows you to use more quote-unquote sort of value graveyard plays in a way that is much more likely to benefit you in game one especially.
Yeah, and I actually have some lists drawn up that I'm going to propose on this episode that use the graveyard in precisely that way. So I'm hoping that when I get to actually playtest them, maybe, say, after next Monday at about 2 p.m. Pacific time or whenever the announcement comes out, that maybe the path will be clear for me to get a little bit of incidental value out of the graveyard here and there without just getting crushed by all the hate you're describing.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. There definitely was graveyard hate before Hogak. I'm sure there still will be after. The levels will probably be a little bit lower. Phoenix is still a top meta deck, and then the red Phoenix decks, and then the Grixis Urza deck. Although, you don't really want Surgical against Grixis Urza.
Yeah, so basically, we talk about how the top four decks are established right now. If you remove Hogak from that, you're left with Urza Sword, the red decks, and Tron. So you could say, well, okay, any deck going forward, let's assume those are still good, should be prepared for all three of those. Those are very different decks that fight you on different axes. Surgical is actually kind of useful against all three as a sideboard card. I mean, I don't love it against Urza Sword, but it sort of works against Phoenix, and you can do it against Tron. I guess the bigger question is, like, what about the rest of the metagame? I heard a theory put forward by, I think, Ross Merriam, that the natural tendency in Modern is towards fair decks. Like, the majority of Modern players just want to play fair Magic, quote-unquote fair Magic, and will always be looking for opportunities to do so. In addition to that, the Modern Horizons as a set was skewed toward bolstering fair Magic, except for like a couple of egregious cards like Hogak.
Except for the most successful cards in the set. Yeah, that's definitely what it was all about, bolstering.
Well, yeah, with the notable exception of Hogak and perhaps Urza, like the rest of the set is geared towards helping fair decks. So we may see a mass resurgence of Jund-style strategies.
And I do think it's notable. Again, we can't just take Hogak out and say the next three are the highest performing decks, but the other three high performing decks are slow enough that blue-white can be built to beat all three of them. So, you know, then blue-white might have its, you know, time in the sun when it can be targeting. It can obviously play Stony Silence. There's lots of life gain options in white. Counterspell is very good against Tron because blue-white has plenty of time to set up.
Yeah, I mean, the more I see blue-white, the more I feel like it's a deck that will always be very present in the meta. There's a lot of players of it. but it doesn't seem like it's that good of a modern deck these days. The matchup data always seems to support this also.
Yeah, I do agree with you on the matchup data. Especially skewed, I think, because lots of good players like playing blue-white, and they still don't have that much success with it. So I think Damon is on to something that it always seems better than it is, because the games you win, you're winning for so long. And then the games you lose, you know, you end up just scooping them up on turn three or four.
Yeah, I'm not the first person to say this either. I've been hearing this from other people, too.
Yeah, so my post-Hogak recommendation would actually just be Niv-Mizzet. I know that that's a little silly to say that, because we've been harping about this deck for a while now, but I think it's like actually going to be really good. I played a few more leagues with it. You know, I missed it. You know, it's been a week since the GP, and I haven't got to cast any dragons in a while. And yeah, the deck just wins a lot. It's like I 5-0'd right off the bat and had a couple more 3-2s with like really, really close losses, you know, getting gacked or whatever. I think this deck is like legitimately good. That's what, sort of what I recommend if you don't want to play one of the top tier decks. Take a good hard look at Niv-Mizzet, and you can check our last episode for our thoughts on how you should build it. But beyond that, yeah, I think it's going to be hopefully an exciting time to start brewing again, so I'm excited to do that and just take some new list out for a spin.
Yeah, I mean, you sold me on Niv-Mizzet. I do wonder if that deck became a big meta dog, it would be slightly oppressive to the fair strategies almost.
That's what I love about it. I just love the salty tears of the Jund players. I had a couple players just like cast a discard spell, they look at my hand and they just concede. Damn, I'm never going to beat this deck. I couldn't argue with them. I was like, yeah, this matchup is terrible for you.
Yeah. There's a sword matchup, though, is interesting for Niv-Mizzet. I don't think it's super clear-cut who's favored.
Well, Niv-Mizzet can make itself favored against anything by virtue of having access to every hate card in the format. It's a question of, A, figuring out what is the Urza Sword list that you're targeting, and then B, like, which cards do you want? We talked about how Kolaghan's Command is something that, when that card is playable main deck, it is just a stone-cold killer. And the metagame hasn't really rewarded playing that card for the past couple months, but it's just, like, deadly against anything that has artifact targets. Yeah, that's easy. I mean, Fracturing Gust, you have up to four copies of that after you side one in because of Bring to Light. Devastating card. There's plenty of tools to beat Urza Sword.
It can be up to five copies. I mean, it's not unreasonable to play four Bring to Light in your list. You don't have to only play three.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But anyway, enough about Niv for now. I think we've said plenty about that deck. So yeah, we'll leave it at that for this sort of lame duck season of Modern, and we'll be right back with some fresh brews.
Hello, we are back. So the card we want to talk about this week is sort of the Elemental Tribe in general, and maybe Risen Reef in specific. What we've seen since the release of Modern Horizons and M20 is that there's been some shells that have taken advantage of some Elemental cards. So, Damon, you kind of want to break down some of the synergies players have been exploiting to some of these 5-0 lists?
Yeah, so I think the first highest-profile Elemental list that's been picking up a lot of traction doesn't feature Risen Reef at all and is a Rakdos 8-ball shell featuring 4-ball Lightning and 4 Lightning Scale Elemental. And then to tie those together and give it a nice value engine is 4 Thunderkin Awakener from M20, which is 2 mana for a 1-2 haste that lets you resurrect basically one of your Ball Lightning or Skelemental cards. This deck also features 4 Unearth with synergized super well with Skelemental, and then a classic Rakdos aggro package of a bunch of Lootings, Fatal Pushes, Inquisitions, Bolts, Thoughtseize, and then a couple Dreadhorde Arcanist as an additional value engine. This deck has seen, I think, a fair amount of play. I've run into it in leagues a few times. Caleb Durward is a big champion of the deck, and I think also Lord of the Lobsters went 6-1 in a modern challenge with it. My impression is that this deck actually is quite strong. The dream start is maybe turn 1 looting, discard 2 Skelementals, turn 2 like unearth, I guess is like the nuts or something. With a close second being turn 1 looting, discard Skelemental, turn 2 Thunderkin Awakener, resurrect Skelemental. And if your opponent can't kill the Thunderkin Awakener right there, they're in a lot of trouble. I think one of the reasons why it hasn't been super popular these days is that it just isn't good against Hogak. The black discard and the bolts and like the Skelemental stuff, it just doesn't do much against 8/8 cards. And so this deck might pick up a lot of steam, actually, if Hogak gets banned. It seems like it has a very powerful proactive game plan, which tends to always be fundamentally like a good strategy in Modern.
So a question that occurs to me is it being held back by graveyard hate? I mean, the two of the powerful lines you mentioned are Unearth and Thunderkin Awakener. Those are both resurrecting Skelementals or Ball Lightnings. So is it the case that this deck is incidentally weakened by graveyard hate, or is it more a case that if you're just spending your mana on these 6-1s, that either is or isn't good against what decks are doing right now.
Yeah, I haven't played against the deck quite enough to be sure. I mean, certainly, I think a card like Rest in Peace or Leyline of the Void is really quite good because it shuts off basically everything. Thaudricate Awakener becomes a terrible card. Arcanist becomes a 2-mana 1-3. Looting becomes a Careful Study, etc., etc. But, I mean, Unearth cycles at the very least, so that's cool. And I'm not sure that, like, Surgical is... It might be, like, a little bit too narrow. This deck has, like, a lot of decent graveyard synergies, not, like, single, super powerful graveyard synergies, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah. I think most of these lists are playing for Seasoned Pyromancer, who is actually a great card for those troublesome games where they've got the Leyline in play or whatever.
Yeah.
You can flush away the Thunderkins in your hand, give you turn those into 1/1s, and, you know, presumably they've weakened their deck by putting in those graveyard hate cards and are now soft to your just sort of general plan. So it's possible that this deck has a nice angle and that you can really punish them if they tap out for a Rest in Peace on turn 2 or something. You just lightning them, they take 6, do it again, and just burn them out from 20.
Yeah, yeah. The deck does have a bit of a weakness to cards like Lava Dart.
Yes.
Punks your Skelementals and Gutshot out of Phoenix. But yeah, I think the deck is... You see a lot more of it in the near future, depending on the BNR update. The next shell that I think has been seeing much more experimental play, I don't think we've seen any like high-profile finishes with it, is a 5-color elemental deck. And this one does feature 4 Risen Reef, and it basically just features a bunch of elementals from all sorts of colors, basically every color. At the bottom of the curve, it has Flamekin Harbinger, which is a 1-mana 1/1 for a red elemental shaman. And on ETB, you can find an elemental and put it on top of your deck. And unlike the guy who was cheating in Legacy, you don't get DQ'd for doing this.
Wait, what?
Some dude got DQ'd out of like a high-profile European Legacy tournament because in the top 8 on camera, after they prize split, he did some like shady stuff. Like he played a Tropical Island, Wasteland, Telluriland, Go, which is 2 lands in 1 turn, which is like, you know, maybe that's not cheating. Maybe he just forgot. And then he also like brainstormed, put back 2 cards, fetched, searched his library, never shuffled the top 2 cards, so they just stayed on the top deliberately. And so then, of course, he, like, top decks that card. And so he got DQ'd. With Flamekin Harbinger, you get to shuffle your deck and then put the card on top, so you don't have to cheat to do that, is the nice thing. And then it features a bunch of elementals going up the curve, some of which I'm not super familiar with, but there's, like, a Creeping Trailblazer is a green and a red for a 2-2 with a +1/+0 elemental, like, Lord Pump. The kind of core of the deck looks to be 4 Thunderkin Awakener, 4 Skelemental, 4 Risen Reef, 4 Vesper Lark as another way to recur your Skelementals. The deck features 3 Collected Companies and 4 Aether Vials, and so I guess this helps it really get a lot of value out of its elemental package. Here, I'm not opposed to Aether Vial. This deck has 31 creatures. Furthermore, there are all sorts of colors, and I think the mana base here looks to be a little bit stretched.
Oh, most definitely. And just a quick corrective. So Vesper Lark is somewhat different from Thunderkin. So Vesper Lark checks
power,
and Thunderkin Awakener checks toughness. So Vesper Lark will return any creature, doesn't matter whether it's elemental or not, that has power 1 or less. Thunderkin will return any elemental that has toughness less than Thunderkin's toughness. So they don't quite work. I mean, you can use a Vesper Lark to get back a Thunderkin Awakener, and you can use a Thunderkin Awakener to get back a Vesper Lark, but a Vesper Lark cannot get back a Skelemental.
Yeah, the Dreadhorde Arcanist is spell of CMC less than or equal to its power. So it's like, this templating, they've taken it up to every possible axis of casting things from your graveyard with power or toughness less than this creature's power or toughness or CMC.
You may return any elemental with an even power or tied with this creature. One of those two must be true.
Yeah, but not both.
No, certainly not both.
Yeah, and this deck features 1 Omneth, Locus of the Royal. This is one I remember. There was an interesting Reddit post about how you become teamer, and I think it involved eating Cheetos and then drinking Mountain Dew Baja Blast or something like that. So this guy has Cheeto dust on his fingers, and he's in a river of Mountain Dew Baja Blast, as opposed to the other Omneths who have not been to Taco Bell recently.
I remember that post. That was pretty funny. The art for Omneth is just this little green guy. That's the original Omneth.
Yeah.
And then they just like colored in some little red center when he's mad, and then puddles of blue water around him when he's now in the Royal, splashing around in the Royal or something.
Yeah.
So in broad strokes, those are the two existing elemental decks. There's sort of a third archetype that has seen a couple 5-0 finishes that uses Risen Reef in a deck that is not all in on elementals. It's more just like a Bant value company deck. Kind of shudder to say those words because we utter them often and it always leads to the same the same disappointing place. But this deck features cards like Ice Fang Quetzal, Eternal Witness. It could even play Restoration Angel if we wanted to, Spell Quellers. I think this deck is fine. It's in a very similar place to all Bant value decks throughout the history of time and is maybe just a weaker version of Bant Soul Herder, which has been picking up a lot of steam. So I'm not too interested in that angle of just like a medium mini elemental package of Risen Reef and Voice of Resurgence.
It's interesting in the sense that it also plays two Phantasmal Image. And the thing with Risen Reef is that it's a snowball card. It's not the first Risen Reef that gets you. The first one is just like a bad coin oracle. But as soon as you like Phantasmal Image or Risen Reef, all of a sudden every elemental you just go nuts, like in a hurry.
Yeah, that part I do like, and I think that's something that I'm interested in exploring and is going to be featured in the list that I'm about to talk about for today. So maybe let me transition here to talk about where I see there's room for some brewing with the Elemental Tribe. The hypothesis that is on my mind is that, okay, so now that Elementals got a pretty significant boost from Horizons in the form of Lightning Skelemental and Vesper Lark, and then it's kind of surprisingly was the featured tribe in M20, we now have Risen Reef, but also this Creeping Trailblazer Lord or Omnath. It raises the possibility that this is going to be the next 5-color tribe. The color requirements are demanding, but we've already proven that you can do it with humans. You have Cavern of Souls. You have Unclaimed Territory. There's Ancient Ziggurat if you want that. Elementals even has their very own 5-color land. They have Primal Beyond. So what do I do with that? What I do often when I'm trying to figure out a tribe writ large is I use what I call the Scryfall method for brewing. Scryfall is basically like the Gatherer search engine, but much, much better. If you do not use Scryfall, just go to your bookmarks and find the Gatherer page and delete that bookmark from your page and go to scryfall.com instead and bookmark that. It is so much easier, so much cleaner than Gatherer, and it is responsive to more sophisticated searches, everything that Gatherer can do, but much cleaner. So I guess I break this process down into 4 steps. The first thing is I figure out what I'm searching for. In this case, I was just searching for elementals. And I organize that search by converted mana cost so that I can kind of figure out what would happen at each juncture of the curve or each turn of the game, thinking back to what Dave and Rhett were telling us about a couple episodes ago of sort of how you have to visualize what you're going to do on each of the first few turns and then see whether that's going to add up to something powerful enough to keep up in the format. So my first step is to do a search for all elementals on Scryfall, first at 1 CMC, then at 2 CMC, all the way up to 4, maybe 5. So when I did that, here's what I found. At 1 CMC, the pickings were extremely slim. There was basically Flamekin Harbinger. The playability of that card is somewhat in doubt. It's a 1-red elemental shaman. 2 for any elemental, that's great. Put it on top of your deck, that's not so great, because it's stuck there. You have to like draw it next turn, and they know what's coming. It's card disadvantage in that sense. All you got from that was a 1-1, the value of which is questionable. Beyond that, nothing really that jumps out at me as super playable. We have a list in front of us here. Any of these cards at the 1 CMC strike you as contenders for Modern?
Oh, Niv-Magus Elemental is a legacy powerhouse.
It is a legacy powerhouse, but for Modern, I don't know about that. I mean, I guess Flusterstorm is Modern legal now, but that's a different deck, yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
At 2 CMC, there's some slightly more intriguing options, some more power located here. So we talked about Thunderkin Awakener, which has proven itself. Voice of Resurgence used to be sort of the go-to elemental at 2 mana. Voice has been on hard times in Modern for a long time now, but I guess I'm wondering if that's still true. Like, what do you guys think about? Is Voice of Resurgence a playable card these days, just on the merits?
I guess I tend towards no. I didn't even like it when it was quote-unquote good. That was the card I was always kind of happy to shave down to 2 of or something. It's just so weak against unfair decks. If you think about the other 3 decks that we talked about, it is okay against the mono-red prowess deck, but it does nothing against Tron. And it does, you know, probably even less than nothing against the Urza list. It's fine against decks like Jund, but I think we first have to show that Jund is going to be that powerful before I'm that intrigued to play more than
one or two Voice of Resurgences, is my sense.
Yeah, we always seem to sneak this guy into all of our Faithless Brewing Selesnya decks. It ranges from being like incredible to pretty poor. It's super swingy based off the matchup. That said, having it like with this Flamekin Harbinger to like find it in the matchups where it's good and hopefully just never see it in against Tron, it's at least interesting to consider it as a one of.
Yeah, so I guess my feeling about it is that the protection from spells on your turn thing almost never comes up. And it's really the death trigger that makes this card good or bad. If you are getting the death trigger off Voice of Resurgence regularly and for value, it's actually quite good. And you can get that by blocking a prowess creature or by sacrificing the Voice of Resurgence proactively. And I think those have been the more successful builds. Like we're basically splashing white in our Bant Monkey form list just for Voice of Resurgence and some sideboard cards, because it's so good when you're neoforming Voice of Resurgence. You end up with a lot of power in play and a three drop of your choice. I'm not that interested in playing Voice without some kind of synergy thing like that, maybe a sacrifice outlet, but it's a card that, you know, we need to be aware of.
Also worth noting that the token you get when Voice dies, or when the spell effect that dances never gets triggered, that is an elemental as well. So that does trigger Risen Reef. So that's the one kind of corner case where I'm a little interested. If you neoform for the Risen Reef, though, you get your token first, right? So that's not a thing.
True. So we'll keep Voice in mind. Going down the list at 2 CMC, Unsettled Mariner, the blue-white changeling from Modern Horizons. This card is technically an elemental, and it is one of the more playable cards. Humans has picked up this card. I've seen some Merfolk decks splashing for it. It's sort of fine. It's like a mini Thalia / mini Kira Great Class Spinner. It doesn't really synergize with anything, but it is a plausible card that you can play that is 2 mana and that counts as your creature type. Next card down, Creeping Trailblazer. This is the lore that Damon was telling us about. It only pumps power, and then it has this weirdo 4 mana ability to pump itself that is probably not going to come up. Phantasmal Image is probably the next card that we should keep in mind. That is not itself an elemental, so you can't cast it off of the Cavern of Souls or whatever, but it lets you double up on anything synergistic that you are doing. The most exciting one, of course, being Risen Reef, as Damon said. You get a ton of triggers off that. And then finally, I mentioned Smoke Braider. One and a red for an Elemental Shaman. It is a 1/1 creature that taps for 2 mana in any combination you want, but that can only be used to pay for elementals or elemental abilities. I don't know whether this card is playable or not. I have seen it pop up in some of those elemental lists that Damon was talking about. I'm pretty skeptical of this card. 2 mana creatures are already asking a lot, and this one has 1 toughness, and we were already talking about Lava Darts, Ren and Sixes running around. So I'm not super optimistic for Smoke Braider. There are more at 2 CMC, but I don't think any of them merit discussion at this moment. Would you guys agree with that?
But Eyes of the Wizened, what a card. What does it even do? Wow, who needs Voice of Resurgence with this guy on the battlefield?
What does it do? I don't think anyone knows what this card is.
I didn't know until I looked it up. 1 and a green for a tribal enchantment elemental to help boost your opponent's Tarmogoyf. Whenever an opponent plays a blue spell during your turn, you may put a 4/4 green elemental token into play.
Yeah. That may have been good before there was like small Teferi to just bounce it and embarrass you.
I do think that Young Pyromancer is always a card. You know, we've seen it played in a bunch of different shells. Obviously, if you start playing Young Pyromancer, the composition of your deck has to skew a little bit more towards spells, but it's always a card worth considering.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I actually listed that at the end of the list because when you're searching for like creatures with type elemental, you don't find Young Pyromancer. Scryfall does let you search for any card that mentions elemental in the rules text and is not itself an elemental. So don't forget to do that search when you're gathering potential players. So yeah, Young Pyromancer is probably the most proven card on this list at 2 mana. So going down to 3 mana, things start to get really interesting. We get some powerful cards that happen to be elementals. Lightning Scale Elemental, we've talked about that. Flicker Wisp is a proven card, not just in Modern, but also in Legacy. It's quite good with Aether Vial, and you can do all kinds of shenanigans with it. Fulminator Mage, sideboard all-star. Doesn't see a lot of main deck run in Modern, but that's partly because there hasn't been any reason to. So it is technically an Elemental Shaman, so that's something to keep in mind. Risen Reef, this is the new one from M20 that was briefly dominating both Draft and Standard. Unclear if this is going to actually have what it takes in Modern, but it's probably the most exciting in terms of just really going off and rewarding you for playing a bunch of elementals, especially if you can get 2 copies of it in play. Going down the list, we have Ball Lightning and Groundbreaker, the same card. One is red, one is green. If you're just really interested in getting aggressive, Rage Forger. This is one of my personal favorites. It is a weird card in that it is not really an elemental card. So it is an elemental shaman, 2/2 for 3. When it comes into play, you get to put a +1/+1 counter on each shaman you control. So you'll have a deck, some percentage of it will be elemental shamans, but Rage Forger prefers that all your creatures be shamans and not necessarily elementals. And then it has the additional ability, whenever a creature with a +1/+1 counter on it attacks, you get to ping a player or planeswalker for 1 damage for each creature that attacks. So it's kind of like a double lord in that sense. And if you ever get a counter on the Rage Forger itself, you're really stacking up the pings at an alarming rate. Beyond that, there is Vesper Lark, which we talked about before, and then some cards that incidentally produce elemental tokens, Seasoned Pyromancer probably being the premier one that can produce up to 2 elemental tokens on the ETB, and then you can also exile it from the graveyard for 2 more tokens. Anything else on the 3 CMC list stand out to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, Rage Forger, when I've seen Caleb Durward play on his stream, he compared it to Hellrider, but like a lot better. And Hellrider is like it's certainly not a modern power card, but that is a very powerful magic card as far as just things go. Rage Forger lets you get a ton of damage out of nowhere. But yeah, it pulls you in the shaman direction, which is a tricky balance.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm somewhat intrigued by the 3-mana Chandra printed in M20. She has a 0 loyalty ability that makes 2/1/1 haste elementals. You can do that each turn. If you have a real way to get paid off for putting elementals into play, she's sort of a quote-unquote free way to trigger it without having to spend any mana each turn. Her base rate is relatively weak, though, so you really need to get paid off on those synergies, I think, for her to be even considerable.
Yeah, she's such an interesting card because each of her 3 abilities kind of ask you to build a different deck. Like the Snapcaster minus ability asks you to have a lot of spells in your deck. The token-making ability asks you to have some sort of reward for creating either tokens in general or elementals. The 0 ability of putting loyalty counters on red planeswalkers asks you to be more like a Super Friends build. So I'm not quite sure what to do with her, but she is really, really intriguing card, for sure. So I'm just going to move down the list because there's not that many left. So at the 4 CMC, we have the new Omnath that Damon was telling us about, the Cheetos Baja Blast Omnast. Vengevine is probably the premier elemental in Modern right now, even more so than Thunderkin Awakener, but that will hopefully change. So Vengevine asks a lot of your deck if you're trying to do any shenanigans with it. You don't have to do shenanigans with it. If you think back to when we were building the Kiora ramp deck and just checking for creatures with 4 power, and we discovered that just 4 power and haste is pretty good in Modern, we tried Vengevine there, and actually some people on the Ponza subreddit adapted the deck to just play 4 Vengevines and hardcast them. So don't forget about Vengevine when you're trying to, you don't have to do graveyard stuff to play that card. Finally, there's Master of Waves, who is not himself an elemental. He is a merfolk, but it creates a potentially large number of elemental tokens upon entering the battlefield, equal to your devotion to blue. And that can potentially trigger the Risen Reef a very large number of times. Those tokens will also get the benefit of your Creeping Trailblazer, if that's something you're also interested in doing. So that is probably one of the most tempting cards on the list. It requires more of a blue-heavy build. Moving up the list then, at 5 CMC, you have the Evoke creatures, Ingot Chewer to destroy artifacts, Shriek Maw for creature removal. There's Moldrifter as well for sort of generic card draw. I did see one player with Jedi Lifestrider as an anti-red card, I guess, this 2/8 creature that gains 2 life for each elemental you tap when it comes into play. That basically does it for the list of playable elementals. So that's sort of my step one. I've searched Scryfall, I've found all the elemental and elemental adjacent cards and organized them by CMC. The next thing I do is I just try to step back and see, what do I have here? I look for any pockets of synergy within these cards that we've highlighted. Those pockets of synergy will hopefully be like the seed of something powerful that will inform the core of the deck that I end up building. When I tried to do that exercise, I came up with actually a number of things that were pulling in slightly different directions. And so I thought maybe it'd be helpful to sort of run through them and see what you guys think about which ones would potentially form a cohesive deck if we put them together. The first one that jumped out to me was Risen Reef and Flamekin Harbinger. if you have the Reef in play, the Harbinger will put a elemental on top of your deck, and then the Reef trigger will put that card directly into your hand. So you actually tutor for any elemental directly into your hand. Maybe that's cute, like those are both 1/1s. That's a lot of mana to be spending on 1/1s. It is something you can do. The Thunderkin Awakener has a number of potential synergies. There's Lightning Skelemental that has been explored to a great deal, but there's also Flicker Wisp. Thunderkin Awakener can grab a Flicker Wisp out of the graveyard. The Flicker Wisp can then clear away a blocker or just do whatever you want. If you happen to have a Thunderkin and you return some other creature, you can then cast a Flicker Wisp from hand in the second main phase and you get the creature back permanently if you blink the creature that is temporarily returned from the graveyard by the Thunderkin Awakener. Finally, with Thunderkin, you're rewarded for increasing its toughness. If you can increase its toughness to 3 with something like a Rage Forger, you are now able to grab elementals with toughness up to 2 out of the graveyard. So that would allow you to, like say, get back more Rage Forgers off your Thunderkin Awakener. Moving down the list, there's Risen Reef will combo with any kind of token-making effect, right? So Master of Waves being the most home-run version of that, but also any of the Pyromancers, the Seasoned Pyromancer or Young Pyromancer, the Chandra that makes tokens. There's even this card Scampering Scorcher from M20 that is a 1-1 for 4 that also brings 2 1-1 elementals with it. That's 3 triggers off Risen Reef if you're trying to do that. Vesperlark has synergy with any 1-power elemental, so the best ones being Risen Reef and Thunderkin Awakener, but also it gets back the Flamekin Harbinger, and Phantasmal Image is a 0/0, so you can actually kind of generate a mini loop with Vesperlark. Phantasmal Image in turn combos with Risen Reef to get multiplying triggers, and then you have various things that would work with discard outlets, so Seasoned Pyromancer being a discard outlet that produces elementals. So you can do Thunderkin Awakener plus Seasoned Pyromancer, get things in the graveyard, Vengevine plus Seasoned Pyromancer, if you want a way to get the Vengevine in the graveyard. There are enough elemental cards that pull things out of the graveyard between Thunderkin Awakener and Vesperlark that you are somewhat rewarded for building a strong discard package into your deck. That's sort of what I see when I'm trying to sort of fit these jigsaw pieces together. How does that sound to you guys?
Yeah, I think you've kind of got all the major angles sketched out as far as sort of little areas of synergy that are worth at least exploring.
Yeah, that's a lot of ground.
It's not really clear like what deck will crystallize out of this, and I can see why some people just choose for the 5-colors best approach. So at this point, I have my list of cards at each mana cost, and then I have my list of synergies I want to explore. The next thing I would do is I would try to brainstorm cards that did not come up in my search, but that could potentially supplement one of these synergies to really maximize them, to make a strong combo or to just sort of tie it all together. So 5 cards came to mind here. The first one, Ultra Dementia. This card allows you to go infinite with Vesperlark and Phantasmal Image. This is something that Dave, you were pointing me towards a while back. As long as there's a Vesperlark in play, any Phantasmal Image that is copying Vesperlark can sort of return itself off its own death trigger, because once it's in the graveyard, it's a 0/0 creature. To complete that combo, you need a Sacrifice Outlet, something like a Carrion Feeder or an Ultra Dementia to just mill them out. Amulet of Vigor is kind of a speculative one. It does combo with Risen Reef in a really interesting way. So Amulet allows every land that Risen Reef puts into play will actually come into play untapped instead of tapped. And if you have multiple amulets, you're actually gaining a ton of mana every time you hit a land off Risen Reef. So you can potentially just go off and play your entire deck in one turn using Risen Reef plus Amulet of Vigor. Collected Company jumped to mind because most of these creatures we're talking about fall in the 1-3 CMC range, and it also happens to get you a lot of triggers for Risen Reef if you happen to hit 2 of them at once. And finally, Neoform, a card that, you know, is a personal favorite of ours on the cast. It just so happens that I think that there's a lot of rewards within the elemental curve that we've been outlining. You are rewarded for going up the chain by 1 CMC. So, for example, Flamekin Harbinger, mostly useless 1-1, but you can sacrifice it with Neoform to find a very good 2-2. Like, you'll get a Thunderkin Awakener as a 2-3 that can then immediately return the Harbinger. That 2-3 Thunderkin is then able to return stronger elementals as the game goes on. Likewise, if you have Voice of Resurgence, Neoform that, you can get a Risen Reef or whatever else you need, be that Vesperlark. You can Neoform a 3-drop to get your Master of Waves if you have the Risen Reef in play. So I was actually really intrigued by the possibilities that Neoform offers for sort of tying everything together. So off the top of my head, those were the cards that I kind of wanted to immediately explore. I'm sure I'm missing a bunch. So if you guys think of anything, be sure to let me know. Those are my first three steps, right? I did my search, sort of organized them by mana cost. I tried to identify synergies, and I tried to think of cards that could augment those synergies. From there, the next step is just to draw up some lists. So that's, I guess, what I want to talk about now, is sort of where I want to start the testing and what I want to learn from that testing. Within each list that I brew up, what are the sort of hypotheses that I'm interested in sort of vetting through gameplay? Does that sound good to you guys?
Yeah, definitely.
The first list that I want to talk about now, then, is what I would call a four-color sort of Vesper Lark Risen Reef value combo deck. You know, I threw some shade at the idea of using Risen Reef in a value deck before, but the equation changes significantly if you can actually add a combo angle to it, and I think that the Vesper Lark plus Ultra Dementia combo can do that. You're already sort of interested in playing Phantasmal Image with Risen Reef to double up the Reef triggers. Phantasmal Image is sort of the missing piece for that Vesper Lark combo as well, so if you're able to fit some copies of Ultra into that deck, you can have, hopefully, sort of have your value and finish with your combo too. So that is the hope here. And I guess the questions that I'm putting to the test in this build are, A, is that Vesper Lark image alter combo even worth trying to do? Or is it just like a distraction? And B, what's up with Risen Reef and Phantasmal Image? Like, are these cards actually powerful enough to form the core of a deck? And I'm going to throw Master of Waves into this equation because I think that's probably the most exciting card with Risen Reef. So testing out those three sort of triads of cards, the Master, the Reef, and the Image, and the Image, the Vesper Lark, and the Altar. What I came up with then, just sort of filling in cards at each point of the curve, was a deck that looked roughly as follows. At one mana, I have Aether Vials and Flamekeen Harbingers, because as we talked about, there's just not very much within the tribe to do on the first turn. That is a weak spot on the curve for sure. At two mana, you get a bunch of cards that I want to play. I want a full set of Phantasmal Image. I want a full set of Neoforms, because I think that's important to sort of make these mismatch pieces fit together. In order to have creatures to sacrifice a Neoform, I think I want Voice of Resurgence. That's one of its best roles. And Unsettled Mariner, I give that a slot as well, because it adds to Blue Devotion for when I hopefully get Master of Waves in play, and will protect or pseudo-protect any of these mostly fragile elemental creatures. I'm not imagining that the opponent will not be able to kill them, but if they are going to kill my small elemental creatures, I want them to at least pay more mana for it. So I'm going with 3 Voice of Resurgence and 3 Unsettled Mariner. Beyond that, I want to have a couple interesting Neoform targets, so I think that Thunderkin Awakener as a one of to find off Neoform can be quite powerful. Ditto for Creeping Trailblazer, that allows me to tutor up this Lord effect if I happen to have a wide board in play. I'm not planning to have a wide board at all times, but if I can, I think I'd like the ability to search for a Creeping Trailblazer. And then 2 Ultra Dementia. I'm not really sure how many of that I should be starting with in this list, because the card doesn't really do much if I'm not actually executing the combo. At 3 mana, I have the cards that sort of finish the combo, so 4 Risen Reefs and 4 Vesper Lark. And I should clarify that Risen Reef is not part of a combo, that's just like the value card. But the Vesper Lark is part of the combo that can either return something for value or can actually just go off with the image and the altar. And then I have a few more interesting Neoform targets. Renegade Rallier, that's a great one to find when you sacrifice Voice of Resurgence, because it can immediately return the voice and you're left with a ton of power in play. That's something that we tried in the Monkey Form list to pretty good results. Flicker Wisp if you need a temporary removal. Rage Forger if you need a boost for like your Thunderkin Awakener or whatever else you have in play. And then some 4-drops to round it out. So 2 Master of Waves and 1 Omnath. And again, because of Neoform, I don't think you need too many of these. So that's sort of where the sketch ended up, with slots for 20 lands. And you have sideboard options. You want to prefer to use elementals to get whatever effects you need, because you have the Flamekin Harbinger to find them. So things like Ingot Chewer for artifact destruction, Healer of the Glade for life gain, Shriek Maw for removal. So that's the list. What do you guys think of this?
So you don't have that much blue devotion. Like, the whole deck, I count 11 blue pips, plus 4 if you count Phantasmal Image. So I just don't know if the Master Waves plan seems that coherent here. And then secondly, I wonder, Do you want to try to be going for the combo reliably? And if so, shouldn't you be running more alters, like three or four?
Yeah, I had kind of a similar, I was going to say almost the same thing as far as, I think you should either try to build around the combo or not. And the number of blue pips was a little concerning. It's not clear that Master Waves would be better than just three mana Chandra here, other than the fact that it's like tutorable four. But if it's just putting one two elemental into play, that's just not very exciting.
Well, just to address those 2 points, so the three mana Chandra requires a much different mana base. This is a four color deck that would be leaning heavily on probably some of the tribal lands we talked about, and you just can't cast a Chandra with that mana base. Master of Waves, I mean, you can play it as a 4-of, and then you really want to have a lot of devotion. I have it here as a 2-of. It could even be a 1-of. You only want to get this card when you have the Risen Reef in play. And so that means it's already 2 devotion minimum. Risen Reef is 1, Master of Waves is 2. So that's 2 triggers. I would not want to cast the card if I didn't have a Risen Reef in play. I see what you're saying about that. Kind of a win more, but it's kind of like it's your finisher. Like, if you've got a Risen Reef to survive, Master of Waves will finish the job. But it's not like your featured card.
Yeah, I mean, it even is a Lord, like, for elementals.
Yeah, I forgot about that, so yeah, that's good, too.
What about the altar thing? I mean, at the point you're playing four, like, Vesper Lark does not seem like that good of a card besides this combo.
That's an interesting point. I mean, so Vesper Lark can give back your Risen Reef, assuming that that's the card that your opponent is most concerned with killing. You can fetch the Risen Reef back, and you can fetch back Phantasmal Images just, like, for value, quote-unquote. I do think that this would primarily play as a value deck. I just like having the combo angle in there. But two altars, yeah, there's no way to tutor for the altar. So maybe that's a problem. Maybe I need to add some kind of stack outlet that you can tutor for, or just drop the angle altogether.
Well, I mean, you have four Neoform, four Phantasmal Image, four Vesper Lark. So you're basically at a lot of copies of that part of the combo. You just don't have many copies of altar.
So you're saying just add more altars.
Yeah, you even have four Flamekin Harbinger. So you have like a million ways to find Phantasmal Image and Vesper Lark. And so I feel like if you wanted to make the combo angle higher priority, I feel like you could.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
These one-ofs, I'm not sure that are that useful, so I think there's some easy cuts here. Like Creeping Trailblazer, I think, is just not a modern-powered card.
I put that in as concession to the fact that these 5-0 lists have been playing it in up to 3 or 4 copies. Yeah, I also don't love it. I can see how it might be useful.
Yeah, I mean, this deck is doing something a little bit different because it has, like, the four Neoform than the other five-color elemental lists. And this, like, dilutes your just raw quantity of elementals in favor of this, like, Neoform angle. And so something tells me this is, like, less of an elemental tribal deck and a little bit more of, like, a elemental toolbox synergy type deck.
Yeah, less slivers and more, you know.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. So maybe I should find a way to get more copies of Altar. What do you guys think about the card Treasure Mage, not Treasure Mage, Trophy Mage? The mage that gets you a 2-mana. Tribute Mage. Tribute Mage, the one from Modern Horizons that gets a 2-mana artifact.
Oh, so you can Neoform for that?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, it doesn't... I mean, it seems slightly crazy, but I'm down to try it.
It adds a lot of mana to whatever you're trying to do, but if you Neoform for it, that's 2 mana for Neoform. You need 2 more mana to cast the altar. It doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah, no, I mean, it basically gives you an extra 5 copies of Neoform when you add a single copy of that card. Or, sorry, 5 copies of Altar.
You could potentially reduce Altar to a 1-of and play, like, a Metallic Mimic as a second tutor target, which can become an Elemental Lord, if that's what the situation calls for.
I have to say, this stuff all sounds sweet, and then it's like, it feels like in real modern games, they're just so fast that these sweet plays never come up, but I'm willing to believe in the new world modern that we're creating for our children that all of these sweet lines. I mean, I think that's like really, really clever deck building. I fear that modern doesn't reward that kind of thing at this moment. But yeah, I love the idea of like not having to play 4 altars because it is kind of a do nothing card without the rest of the combo around it. And then you kind of get to play, like Damon says, functionally 5 extra copies of it.
How fast can you goldfish this combo? You go like turn 2... 2-drop, let's just say, like, Voice of Resurgence, turn 3, Vesper Lark, turn 4, Altar plus Image, and you're live. But if you have to go Neoform the Voice for Trophy Mage, then it's a little bit too slow. It'd be a turn 5 Goldfish. Is that right?
Yeah, I think if you draw the Altar naturally, the best hand you can do is Aether Vial on turn 1, Altar on turn 2, and then on turn 3 you hard cast Vesper Lark and Violin Image
Right.
But adding anything beyond that pushes you back a full turn or more. So it's not particularly fast, and I think this deck is just going to be slow unless we add mana creatures, and that's a little bit troubling.
Yeah, it's too bad you can't front load the Phantasmal Image.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can. I don't know.
I guess if it's on... Oh, no, you can't. It literally has to be copying a Vesper Lark even the first time it dies.
I mean, maybe this deck just needs Noble Hierarch? I don't know.
No, I think I like it, honestly. I think that it's another creature for Neoform.
Because you're already so weak to things that kill one toughness creatures, you just can't avoid them. So it's not like, oh, all of a sudden we're playing four Hierarch, we're vulnerable to Renin 6. It's like, no, Renin 6 kills literally every creature in this deck, unless you have an Unsettled Mariner in play.
I mean, the question is, do you want it to be like a decent five-color elemental deck with like a mediocre combo, or like a pretty good combo deck with that's like a mediocre five-color elemental backup plan?
I want it to be a medium plus four-color value deck with a medium minus combo finish. I'm not even for that 3-2 here.
Yeah.
No, I see what you're saying, though. Here, when you talk about, I think I do want to put in the Noble Hierarchs to just sort of make this a little bit more of a realistic deck.
You can maybe consider cutting the vials at that point. It doesn't work well with Neoform. Like, our Bant Monkey Form deck never ran Vial, right?
No, but we considered it. That's because that deck didn't play any 3-drops. This deck has to play 3-drops.
But having to play 3-drops makes me, like, almost more want to play Hierarch, because it means there's options to skip a turn, sort of, in our mana curve. Turn 2 Risen Reef is much more threatening, right, than a turn 3 Risen Reef.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that I actually want to play both. It reminds me a lot of Bant Spirits, where you want something to do on turn 1, right? So you have Hierarch and Vial for that. And then your best spirits are 3-drops, right? The Drogskull Captain and the Spellqueller. So, I don't know. You have to find slots for Noble Hierarch. I'm not quite sure where that comes from. It's possible this deck is just trying to do too many things. That is one outcome that I think could come up in the testing. I'm going to post one variant list as well that just tries to go a little bit harder on the combo, where I was thinking, like, what if I played the full 4 Ultra Dementia and tried to go self-mill with Hedron Crab to just, like, fill my graveyard? Then I could even play Renegade Rallier, which can, like, pluck a Ultra out of the graveyard. It has its own mini combo with Phantasmal Image, and you can Neoform for it. You can find the Rallier pretty easily off of Neoforming a Voice of Resurgence or something. This one is probably less of an elemental synergy deck. It still has a Risen Reef for that combo potential. But I don't know. Do you think this changes the equation at all? Changes the math? This more self-mill focused build with 4 Ultra Dementia?
I think that really makes the deck a little bit more of a meta call, you know, because you're playing another card that doesn't do anything, right? Like Hedron Crab, if it's not exploiting some synergy with a graveyard, is functionally a do-nothing card. Obviously, you can block like 1/1s or whatever. But so if there's no way for your opponent to attack your graveyard in game 1, and that's maybe a world we're thinking we might be in, then that's much more attractive because it functions as sort of a demonic tutor in the way that sort of Citrus Supplier does right now. It kind of helps find your combo piece and at the same time fills your graveyard up with other cards that might win if you find your combo piece, right? I think in that case, then if there aren't other powerful graveyard decks, then maybe this is a much better version. Because I guess I'm more interested in sort of a medium plus combo plan with a backup where you don't just lose. That seems to be the key to successful modern decks before bannings happen, where you have a relatively powerful, what we would call plan A, that is relatively resistant to hate. And if they go all in on these hate cards, then you still have a reasonable sort of plan B of just beatdown. I think specifically of Blue-Red Phoenix, which was successful for like basically a full year. And you had all the time people load in all this graveyard hate, and instead they would just lose to the 0-4 thing and the ice flipping and just beating them down while they, you know, had 2 rest in pieces in play or whatever.
So you're inclined to build a deck that wins most of its game ones with a combo and then
yes.
has a resilience of a value package to support it, to buff it up.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm a little more intrigued by this because I think the plan A is much more powerful and is therefore competitive with sort of the overarching plans of other decks in Modern. Because I don't think, as much as we like to build these lists, I don't think quote-unquote value lists have been good for a very long time. I'm trying to think of the last time I saw a Collected Company, for instance, in the top 8, when it wasn't attached specifically to the Devoted Druid combo. It's been a minute.
Yeah, that's kind of sad now that you say that. I think you're right. I think it's just gone from the metagame. Man. Okay, well, I think that's all I wanted to say about this sketch. Dave, do you have any further thoughts on it? I know you'd been kicking around some Vesper Lark combo ideas yourself a few months back before the Hogak thing hit us.
Yeah, I think you kind of have the ability to play. I'm trying to think of who talked about it last week. It was Damon, maybe the kind of 8-8-8 list. If you wanted to play Carrion Feeder and Altered Dementia as your sort of 8 free sacrifice outlet, and then you can have your 4 Phantasmal Image, 4 Neoform, and then your 4 Vesper Lark. That becomes way more all-in, though. I don't think you really have a backup plan at that point. And I do think there's still enough graveyard hate that that isn't a powerful enough graveyard synergy deck. But it'll be interesting to see sort of what the metagame ends up looking like, if that's sort of a viable way forward. I do think that Carrion Feeder is just a very powerful card, and just sort of getting random value from sacking creatures in response to removal, etc. We've seen it with the Hogak Shell is something that ends up winning games even after you sort of really attack their graveyard. They can still beat down with a 4/4 that only costs them 1 mana.
Yeah, that's interesting point. You can think of the Carrion Feeder and the Altar as fulfilling the same role. My friend Nick, who we've talked about before, likes to play zombie decks. He also has an affinity for Persist combo. He loves Anafenza or Vizier or Malira Persist combo, and he's actually taking that to GP Vegas sort of as we speak. We did a bit of playtesting this weekend, and he was doing what you're saying, where like relying on Carrion Feeder as one of his actual kill conditions once you've assembled the infinite sack pieces. And what I really didn't like about that was that like it was fast, but then like suddenly they can break your whole combo by killing, well, yeah, by blocking essentially.
Yeah.
Or any kind of removal for the Carrion Feeder. And I was urging him to like move toward Altar as his primary thing. And he also liked Blasting Station as another that works with Persist, but I'm not sure if that actually works with Vesper Lark. Does that work with Vesper Lark? It should.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I guess you could do that as your sack outlet of choice, and that would not require you to move into black. But yeah, Carrion Feeder is just a better card, though, so maybe that's the way to go, like you're saying. You have like a better deck when you're not comboing if you have Carrion Feeder.
You know, I think there's so many moving parts here as far as what you want that I think these cards are more at the power level where they are a proactive combo that's powerful, that can win, you know, on turn 4 with some of the best draws, but they still let the opponent play Magic and disrupt it with sort of normal cards. And I think in a post-Hogak world, we'll get to see the balance of how you can kind of, you know, move your matchups around 5 or 10% with certain builds. And I think that's a better place for Modern to be. So kind of once we sort of create that new world, it'll be interesting to see as we explore the various shells here, what the best way to do that is.
Yeah, well said. So there's one other shell that I want to talk about. That is a shell that explores the synergy between Thunderkin Awakener and Rageforger specifically. Rageforger, as we said, is more of a shaman tribal card that happens to be an elemental, but there are a good number of elemental shamans, and Thunderkin Awakener has both of those creature types. So it will receive the counter from Rageforger and become a 2/3 and is then capable of returning additional Rageforgers from the graveyard or any other 2 toughness elemental you happen to have. What intrigued me here was that the Rageforger itself like did appear as the anchor of a shaman deck a few months back that Caleb Durbor was playing. He had a couple 5-0s with it, and I think one other player also managed to 5-0 with a variant on that. It was like a really bad deck. The shaman tribe is even more of a menagerie of unplayables than the elemental tribe is. There are some sad shamans in that deck, especially at 1 CMC. There was stuff like Fire Drinker Satyr, Spike Shot Elder. There's all kinds of like whack shamans that really shouldn't be any deck ever. And so it seemed like a list that was like really in need of just some upgrades at many spots on the curve. Thunderkin Awakener seemed like a big upgrade at the 2 slot, and then Seasoned Pyromancer is a shaman at the 3 slot that happens to produce elementals as well. So it seemed like there's was enough impetus there for me to just want to revisit a Rageforger type list. So what I came up with was the following. I wanted to start with Flamekin Harbinger because I actually want to find the Rageforger. I think that is the best card in this kind of deck. My only one drop that I think is actually worth playing. I don't think the other Shaman one drops are worthwhile. At 2 mana, Thunderkin Awakener, but also Rixmati Reveler and Burning Tree Emissary. These are not elementals, but actually this is not an elemental tribal deck apart from the Thunderkin Awakener. Like it's more of a shaman deck. So Burning Tree lets you get on the board quickly and Rick's Mighty Reveler is a potential 2-for-1 or 4-for-1 if you play a Spectral Cost. These are just shamans that you can get on the board early that will get buffed by the Rage Forger. At 3 mana, I want a playset of Rage Forgers and a playset of Lightning Scale Elementals, because that is a good aggressive card that combos with a Thunderkin and really pays me off for having Thunderkin Awakeners. And then Seasoned Pyromancer to do everything that that card does. Build a wide board, or draw some cards, or put something in a graveyard that can then recur with Thunderkin Awakener. Rounding out the deck, I think the Unearth angle is important to sort of complement the Thunderkin line, so I put 4 of those in. Lightning Bolts and Faithless Lootings, because those just seem on plan. And then I had room for a Singleton Judith the Scourge Diva at the 3 slot. Possibly I should have been finding more room for Ball Lightnings, I'm not really sure. And this envisions a 20 land deck. What's your take on a build like this? Red, black, Rage Forger, Thunderkin.
So, you know, I kind of agreed with you when I saw Caleb's list and that he was having so much success with it, because not just the 5-0s, I think he's 4-1 with it a bunch of times. My takeaway was just like, man, I think Caleb Durward is like really good at Magic, because I didn't think his list was very good. And so I kind of like your idea that you kind of staple better cards onto the list that he 5-0'd with. And I do think that there were a bunch of cards that were very weak. You know, he's playing Elvish Visionary, Bossk, Banneret, Spikeshot Elder, Fire Drinker Satyr. Missing out on Collected Company kind of feels bad. But yeah, I think there's something here. Like you said, there's still that base sort of Lightning Scale Elemental, Thunderkin Awakener combo that can just steal games. But you also sort of build in a way to sneak in a bunch of damage at the end. I'm not sure if like every land count here is right. I do think cutting down lands now that we're not trying to cast any 4-drops is probably correct. The one thing I would think is maybe Lightning Bolt just isn't even that needed.
Play Company? I mean, that's a light splash. It could do it.
I mean, it's hard to say. I'd have to like play out the deck and see what it feels like. The problem is when you're playing Skelemental, so your best hits are all on your turn, that the sort of EOT Collected Company is much weaker in this deck, so maybe it's right to not play it.
Yeah, I would imagine that we remain phasing Company almost all the time.
Then I do think it's kind of bad then.
Oh, I think it's still fine. I love main phase Company. You just gotta just let them know what you're doing. Like, none of this instant speed stuff. So yeah, looking at the list, I have 16 1-drops, but only 4 of them are creatures, and I'm thinking maybe that's a mistake. Like, maybe I don't need all of the spells there. Trimming either Bolt, like you're saying, or maybe Unearths. Maybe Lootings, I'm not really sure. It's interesting because both the Rick's Mighty Reveler and the Seasoned Pyromancer will just draw you cards straight up if your hand is empty, so there's not that much downside to playing Faithless Looting. The card disadvantage is not really a problem in this deck, I hope, if you're willing to play lower on the curve without Company.
Yeah, and the key is that you need to make sure that you're getting a card worth out of Flamekin Harbinger, right? So it's finding an elemental, that's great, but you have to at some point like trade it off for another card. Doing a couple damage over the course of the game is not enough.
True. So one angle that I consider putting in main deck but ended up just leaving as a sideboard option is Fulminator Mage. This is an elemental shaman that is a 2-2. And if you happen to get Thunderkin Awakener up to 2-3, you can just return the Fulminator Mage every turn and sack it again. It stays in the graveyard, it doesn't get exiled. So you can maybe lock someone out that way if they're on a slower big mana strategy. Your first Fulminator Mage is just a Stone Rain or whatever. You can unearth it to Stone Rain them again. But at some point, you can assemble this Thunderkin Awakener plus a counter on it from Rage Forger, and then the game's just over with Fulminator Recursion. That should be main deck. I don't know.
I guess I don't think so. And again, I can't say that I know what's going to happen with the metagame, but Mono Red Prowess and sort of the UR Phoenix, I think, are going to be powerful decks again. And they're just so proactive and fast that blowing up lands, I mean, the Mono Red list doesn't even play any non-basics. And Burn, of course, is a deck that I don't think, it matters a little bit, but I think it's just too slow against too many of the more linear decks. But it does seem like a very powerful sideboard option and probably lets you save space because it turns your land destruction spell not only is great against Tron, etc., but it's great against any control shell.
Yeah, I just love siding it in against all kinds of things. I have an unhealthy love, perhaps, for Fulminator Mage. Okay, so let me pivot then. So a variant of this list that occurred to me was that the only black cards I was really making good use of there were the Lightning Scale Elementals and the Unearths. There is the Rick's Mighty Reveler. you can speculate that for black, and I have the Singleton Judith, but it's not like a heavy black deck. It's mainly red. If I were to go back to what that original Rageforger list that was more red-green based, if I did that, I could be a red-green deck that used Thunderkin Awakener plus Rageforger, and could even maybe dip into blue for Risen Reef if I wanted to have a little more grinding power, mourning the loss of Collected Company, but you can get it back with a Risen Reef. Then maybe play some Phantasmal Images as well, which I think can be really powerful if you're doubling up on a Risen Reef or on a Rageforger. You can really stack up your triggers with that. So the change to this deck is that I still have Flaming Harbinger on one. On two mana now, I'm going with Thunderkin Awakeners, maybe three Phantasmal Image. I'm going to keep the Burning Trail Emissaries because I do want to get on the board quickly. And then maybe three Creeping Trailblazer, that red-green lord, to sort of boost the power of my miscellaneous elementals. Then my three slot changes, so I still have Rageforger and Seasoned Pyromancer, but now instead of Skelemental, I want to play Risen Reef in that spot. Then by giving up the Unearths, I'm actually going to use that slot for Vengevines instead to sort of top off the curve. If I happen to discard it with, say, a Seasoned Pyromancer or a Faithless Looting, I think I have a decent chance of getting it out of the graveyard. I'm not totally sure about that, but I'm willing to hardcast it if it comes to that. And then maybe a Singleton Omnath as a Flink and Harbinger target. If the game goes along, the Omnath can be sort of a removal spell slash call me back into a game, hopefully.
I mean, this is kind of the list I want to see. Just a straight up value, Vengevine, Seasoned Pyromancer with some synergies in. Like, I don't know if this list is good or not, but this is the kind of list I want to build and like put up against some of the top decks and just see if we're even in the same kind of stratosphere of power. So yeah, I think this is the sort of baseline deck I want to run. I don't want to run Ethervile in a deck with Vengevine, so I'd replace that with something else. But other than that, the other thing I would consider is maybe running, and I know we've tooled around with this before, a couple of Bloodbraid Elves, since they almost always hit creatures, so they almost always trigger Vengevine. So I'd maybe replace the four Ethervials with like two Birds of Paradise and two Bloodbraid Elves or something like that. But yeah, I think this is like a really good starting place to see, like, just find out, is Creeping Trailblazer powerful enough when we do this? Is bringing Vengevine back sometimes fairly, just as a 4-3 or a 5-4 or 5-3 haste creature, is that reasonable? Without having a huge dependence on the graveyard. So, I mean, are they going to bring in graveyard hate against your deck? It actually seems very weak against this deck.
So do you think the Thunderkin Awakener is strong enough if I'm not going hard on discarding? I was not sure if I needed Faithless Looting in this deck, for example. Or discard outlets.
I think you need at least four. I'd probably try to play six. I mean, we have eight with Seasoned Pyromancer. I think Faithless Looting is just so powerful, especially in sideboarded games. Sideboard cards are so powerful that it basically gives you two more shots to find your oof or whatever it is that you need to beat some of these other decks. And because you can kind of get the card advantage back, it just feels almost like a free roll in this deck. It also lets you cheat on your mana a little bit. So I'm a believer in Faithless Looting. It's just the brainstorm of Modern. Obviously, it leads to lots of degenerate linear decks, and that's why people tend to call for its banning. But I think it's actually very reasonable in decks that can occasionally kind of squeeze value out of it. And this is the kind of deck I think that can get a lot of use out of it.
Yeah, I guess my God draw would be like a Looting on turn one. I discard a Risen Reef and a Vengevine, and then on turn two, I play a Burning Tree Emissary and a Thunderkin Awakener, and I get back my Vengevine and my Risen Reef, I guess. I'm like sort of aggroing them and sort of valuing myself at the same time. Yeah, it seems sweet. This retains the ability to do that Fulminator Mage thing. I'm actually really most excited about the card Rageforger. I really hope that card is good.
So to kind of build on Rageforger, I think its ability to play to the board and attack Planeswalkers is really important. You know, before, we'll just call it the mistake of Hogak, the Hogak summer, the Hot Girl summer, we were having to attack, you know, Planeswalkers with a ton of loyalty. You know, they kind of printed Ren and Six and the new 3-mana Planeswalkers and 4-mana Karn. All those Planeswalkers just have kind of like one more loyalty than maybe they should have if we were really sort of from a strict design perspective creating them. And that means you have to like, you can't just rely on Lightning Bolt. That used to be a reasonable way to deal with them. Well, that doesn't kill anything if it pluses. Doesn't kill Ren and Six, doesn't kill 3-mana Teferi, and doesn't kill Karn. So you need to be able to kind of give faux haste to these creatures, and that's what Rageforger does. It's, like you said, a double buff, or as Caleb compared it to the 4-mana 3/3 haste. That's the kind of effect you need, I think, in hopefully what we expect the new Modern to be a little bit more about.
Yeah, I'm excited to cast them and get my triggers. Okay, well, I've outlined a few possible ways to highlight Risen Reef. Thundercan has been popping up in these lists as well, and or Vesperlark. Those are the commonalities to a lot of the decks that I wanted to explore in Elementals. Any final thoughts on these builds? Things that I'm missing or things you might want to explore?
I think we need to be really attuned to sort of how the deck feels this week. We're still going to be playing against Ho'gag. People are still getting ready for GP Las Vegas. I hope the people that are going there have fun. I know it's frustrating to lose to Ho'gag if you kind of have your fun brew you want to play. But, you know, I think if you go in with the right attitude or if you just want to play a bunch of Modern Horizons Limited, it's a great format. But it's more important to sort of learn from these games for what the post-Ho'gag metagame looks like than to sort of take too much to heart if you find yourself losing to Ho'gag, who does have that sort of proactive A plan that a deck like this really cannot compete with, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, that's a great point. The reason we play these leagues is not to get 5-0s. We're just trying to learn about how a deck feels. It's not even about like wins and losses. It's just about learning, does the deck work? How does it work? And like, how does that stack up against the range of things we might face? Yeah, I'm going to try to not be too discouraged if I get gacked a bunch of times this week or get Leyline of the Voided out. I just wanted to return a Risen Reef to play. Is that such a crime?
Yes.
So I think we can leave it at that. We'll take these lists into the queues, and I'll hopefully get some fun triggers with the Elementals. Damon had to leave suddenly for a work thing. Dave, enjoy the rest of your trip, and good luck in the half marathon.
Thank you. Put in those miles.
All right.
Take care.
See you later. That'll do it for episode 17 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. You can find all of our decks from today's show in the episode description of your preferred podcast player. If you like what you heard, have feedback for us, or just want to talk brews, we want to hear from you. You can follow us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG, email us faithlessbrewing@gmail.com, or find us on Reddit at r/modernmagic. Don't forget to leave us an iTunes review, tell a friend, and we will see you next week.